Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Oh, we deteriorate. Celeste Malloy is here, by the way. I'm Andy Griffin. Good morning, everybody. We deteriorated into talking about food during the interim. We had a little extra time. We got talking about chili.
Yeah, so. And I haven't had breakfast, so now you've got me hungry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Well, you have breakfast right there.
That's
Dr.
True.
Pepper Zero. Not going to, it probably won't last that long, though. So.
No.
Yeah. Thank you, Celeste, for coming on today. Great to have you here.
I'm excited to be here. It's a beautiful morning in
St.
George.
It is. Now, up in Cedar City, it's cold.
A little cold. Yeah.
And in fact, I do the weather forecast, and for the next 2 days, the low in Cedar is going to be below 20, like in the teens.
Ugh. Well, I will be in Washington, D.C., so
yeah, okay.
I hope all my neighbors survive.
Probably cold there, too, isn't it? I don't know.
It was when I left. It's been very cold there, unseasonably cold.
So let's talk about you start session when?
Tonight.
Tonight?
Yeah.
It's on.
Yeah.
Wow.
We've got two more weeks left of this Congress, this
okay.
week and next week.
And then you get a Christmas break, and then it's yep. back to it?
Yeah, and then we start the new Congress. We get sworn in on January 3rd, and we're off to the races. And it's the excitement in the air on our side of the aisle right now is palpable.
Yeah, we
have tough choices to make. Not everybody agrees on everything, but everybody's excited.
I was going to ask you about that. There's a reinvigoration in Washington, D.C. right yeah. now, isn't there?
Yeah, I haven't seen Republicans quite this excited since our national convention in July.
So nice. I have a friend was telling me I'm not going to say exactly what he does because I don't want to tell anybody who it is, but he was at someone's house doing some work for them.
Uh-huh.
And of course he's a business owner, so he was excited at what was coming with the new administration.
Yeah.
It should, you know, hopefully inflation is down and it'll help businesses, et cetera, et cetera. And he started talking to the owner about that. Well, the owner is let's just say they voted for Kamala and he got yelled at.
Oh, no.
He's like, yeah, she's hollering at me and everything. And I decided I probably ought to keep my mouth shut and not talk about politics when I'm on a house call. So,
yeah, I've had a few experiences like that where I was in a group of like-minded people and there was one, you know, skunk in the manger, so to speak, who has been in mourning since the election. And,
yeah.
And they're feeling a little salty.
Yeah. Now Thanksgiving dinner, do you have a liberal or two that shows up in your family's Thanksgiving dinner that you
no.
have to keep your mouth shut? Because we have one no. of those in mine, and I have to just go, okay, we're not going to talk politics. It's off the table.
Yeah, in my family, it's a matter of degree. It's like,
oh, okay.
do I want to slash, you know, 10% of the budget or 15% of the budget? do I want to see all of the federal bureaucracy go away or most of the federal bureaucracy? That's what we argue about.
Now, the dynamic has changed because you are actually now in a position to do something about some of that stuff,
yeah.
whereas in the past you were, you know, it was. Well, I mean, we all argue about that stuff,
yeah.
right? At Thanksgiving. Now you are a congressperson. Was it different this year?
It was different this year. It was smaller this year. So the way, you know, families rotate, we had a smaller Thanksgiving this year, which was merciful. I needed a little bit of a break.
Yeah.
But Christmas last year, I'd only been in office for a few weeks, and I was with a lot of extended family, and they all wanted to, you know, talk about what they thought government should be doing different. They wanted to talk about this upcoming election year. So they should all be a lot happier now.
Do you step back sometimes, Celeste, and go, I can't believe I'm where I am, right? I'm a congressperson in the United States of America.
Yeah, almost every day. The times that really hits me are days like today when I'm flying into Washington, D.C. so we can go into session. I get up there in the plane, and all of a sudden I think, as soon as I land, I've got to put on that congressional pin and go be a congresswoman. And I don't know if the shock and awe of that ever wears off. I've asked other members of Congress, and they say, you get a little more comfortable with it, but it doesn't really
there.
Wear off.
Mm, it's still there, yeah. Now, something that nobody wants to talk about, but in New York, sorry about this, but we should talk about it. In New York City, now this wasn't a politician, but it was a leader, a guy that ran a company, a big company in the United States, was assassinated by someone just walked up behind him, and I don't know if you saw the video, shot him dead. It was shocking to me how easy it was.
I haven't seen the video, but I have read articles about it, and it
yeah.
is shocking how easy it is. It's shocking how hard it's been to figure out who did it. And
yeah, he's still at large, by the way.
I just read something this morning as I was getting ready about how the police are kind of having a hard time because a lot of the people they're talking to are a little bit sympathetic with the assassin, which feels very 1930s, right?
Yeah,
mafia, this doesn't feel like America, a developed country, a world superpower, where we have people who are so angry at large businesses that when the head of one gets murdered, people are kind of sympathetic.
That's not good. That's not Christ-like, certainly.
Yeah, well, and I think it's also a symptom that we have to fix something. Something's out of balance. I'm not defending people who are sympathetic, but the fact that that's out there means we have a problem. Healthcare costs are really high. People feel victimized by it, and we're not acting like human beings should act when we find out that somebody got murdered.
It's okay they got shot? No, it's not.
Absolutely not.
So, and the reason I brought it up with you here is, you know, there's not a lot of security when it comes to politicians, unless you're up at the very top.
Yeah.
And even then, we saw President Trump almost get assassinated
twice
when he was a candidate. But
yeah.
Does it give you pause? And let me preface this by saying, so when I took this job, I've been doing this 6 years now, very conservative political talk show. My wife was worried for me. She's like, one of these days, someone's going to show up at your work and they're going to shoot you, or you're going to be getting in your car or whatever. Some wacko is going to do something. And I said, nah, that'll never happen. Although I do have a concealed carry. So I'm not going down without a fight, but
trust in God, but lock your doors.
Yeah, exactly. But there are just enough of those imbalanced people out there that it is something you have to think about, right?
Yeah. So that's one of the reasons I'm really excited about this election and how it turned out, because I really believe that in the next 2 to 5 years, we're going to get some of the balance back in government. And I know it sounds like I'm on a tangent right now, but bear with me. I think people have been feeling so much pressure the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, inflation's been high, regulations keep coming fast and furious, and people feel like life's getting too expensive, they can't afford it. And also, they just don't have the freedom and the autonomy to live the way they want to live.
Yeah.
And when that happens, I mean, this is what history's full of, this is what mythology's full of. People, their freedom gets taken away, they get oppressed, what do? They rise up.
Yeah.
And so I think the pressure's been high and people are feeling grouchy and fatigued and overwhelmed. And if we can get the government back in balance and have fewer regulations, get inflation under control so that people feel like they have the opportunity to live free and prosperous lives, I don't think people who are living free, prosperous, happy lives have any desire to show up at a radio station and harm a host, or to walk up to the CEO of a healthcare company in the middle of a busy downtown and shoot them, or kidnap a politician and harm them. You know, when people can start a business and their business can thrive and they can own a home and be there with their family and, you know, have hobbies and recreate, they do those things. They only reach out in anger and violence, generally speaking, when they feel like they can't live prosperous, happy, healthy lives.
Yeah, pressure, desperation.
Yeah.
Fathers, that sort of thing. You're right.
Which still doesn't make it okay, just to be clear.
No, it doesn't.
But rather than jailing people, let's solve some of the underlying problems and take away the desire to do some of that.
That's a very good point. I think that we're hopeful that things get better. Now, I wanted to ask your opinion on the Elon Musk, Vivek Ramaswamy, Doge, you know, Department of Government Efficiency or whatever.
Yeah.
First of all, I guess maybe I don't understand. Is this really going to be a government department? Is it just going to be a couple of advisors who are going to, and President Trump's actually going to do the actual slashing if it happens, or?
Yeah, I think it's the second. As far as I can tell, they're not going to draw a government salary.
Okay.
So they're not going to work for the government.
And they don't need it. Certainly, Elon doesn't need it.
No, they're doing this because they want to see the country get back in power. So a couple of things about that. They were on the Hill this last week, and they came to the Capitol, and members of Congress and the Senate got to go talk to them. And, I mean, this is what I've been talking about for a long time. We need to get rid of these redundant government regulations and this overreach in government.
Mm-hmm.
And when Doge was announced, I was really excited. But like a lot of Americans, I was a little bit skeptical that two guys who don't have a lot of experience with this would be able to come in and just dismantle it. Because what happens all the time is you get people who run into the teeth of bureaucracy. So I was hopeful that they would be able to do it, but a little worried that they didn't understand what they were taking on. Listening to them talk that day, they understand what they're taking on. They understand administrative law. They know, you know, what things they can legally do and what things they can't do, and they know they're going to need Congress to help them legislate some of these changes. So I'm really excited, really hopeful that way. And then the idea that two very successful Americans who don't need a government salary are willing to come in and look at this with fresh eyes.
Let's
is
go
the
three.
Most
we'll count Trump, too.
Yeah, yeah, and Trump. Like this is what made our country great in the first place. Yeah. I think we're getting back to the right formula where we're not looking at business as usual. We're looking and saying, what's broken about the business? Let's do something unusual and fix it.
I love it. I love it. Now, the other day, we have a little HR thing we can go on and get like a dashboard of look at our job and how much money we make and everything. And I pulled up my pay stub for the year, and then it said, okay, here's how much you made and here's how much you actually took home after taxes.
Ooh.
And it was over 30% of my salary that I made this year went to taxes. And
yeah.
And you can say, well, yeah, but you Social Security is not really a tax because you're going to get some back.
Well,
and all
it's
this
not
stuff.
Going into your bank account, so
yeah,
it is.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of what I was looking at. I was like, maybe it's time we have a DOGE. You know, we have someone like you that says, you know, federal government is bloated. It's gotten too big. It's taking too much. You know, do we really need four different agencies that all have a finger in this pie of whatever?
Yeah.
And the answer is no, we don't need all that. And yes, we do need to fix it.
Yeah. Almost all of these agencies started with a mission that Americans thought, yeah, we probably need someone doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're not good at is going back and reevaluating the cost benefit of this. Like, what are we getting out of this as a country versus what it costs us in time, in money? You know, measure it any way you want. It just keeps bloating, and we've got to start going back and undoing and cutting back a lot of the things we've just let grow.
The old saying is once you pass a law or once you start an agency, it ain't never going back. And that's kind of been the experience is, you know, once the feds start taking your money for this, that, or the other thing, they're not going to give it back. They're not going to repeal that. It's going to keep going and in fact, get worse, as we've seen, right?
Yeah.
So, anyway, we're talking with Congresswoman Celeste Molloy here on the Andy Griffin Show. Celeste is a frequent flyer on the show. Really appreciate you coming. There was a point there a few years ago where I had Chris Stewart on all the time. I had Mike Lee on all the time, and it was really good. Now, what happens a lot is you change the, you know, first of all, you replaced Chris Stewart, which is really nice.
Yeah.
And then with Mike Lee, he changed media guys like four times. And so I think I'm one or two media guys behind. But we're going to get Mike Lee back on the show more often, too, representing Utah. But I appreciate you coming on and representing us. Let's demystify a little bit the whole federal lands thing. I got an email from you, and it's talking about a bill that you sponsored that is trying to get it so that the feds own less of our land, and I'll let you explain it because I don't.
Yeah, this one's actually kind of a surgical bill. It's not much
good,
of a broad overturn of federal land ownership. What it is fixing a very specific problem. Mm-hmm. It's about 800 acres of federal land that's inside or immediately adjacent to state parks.
Okay.
So these are areas that the state is managing for the public's enjoyment. But there are little pieces inside, or in the case of Fremont Indian State Park in Sevier County near Richfield, it's a campground that's right next to the state park, but the state park has been managing it.
But it's a federal camp,
but it's
federal land.
It's on federal land.
Okay.
So what we're doing is turning that land over to the state to be managed as part of the parks. So Senator Lee has the Senate version of this bill. I have the House version. And it just makes sense. So for the state parks to be able to manage land that has little pieces inside that belong to the federal government means they have to go through these federal processes all the time to get permission to manage land as a park.
Yeah.
You want to
dig a hole, get a NEPA report, right?
Yeah. And and the agencies don't really want to manage that land either. I mean, if you work for the Forest Service or the BLM, you don't want to spend a lot of time writing a plan on a little piece of land that's inside a state park that you can't actually manage anyway. So the feds can't manage it. The state's already managing it. But then you run into all this bureaucracy and red tape because we have all these regulations and rules. So we're turning that land over to the state parks to be managed as part of the parks. And that just makes sense. We're not even really seeing opposition to it.
Okay.
There's not a good argument for why the federal government should be going through a NEPA process on whether we should have a picnic table in a state park.
Yeah. Yeah. You might kill a prairie dog. you being from Cedar would appreciate that one. Yeah. Okay. But let's big picture then. Now, that bill aside, let's just talk about federal lands. How much of Utah, and it's a big number, do the feds own? How much land do the feds own in the state of Utah?
You know, the fun part about that question is no one can give you a definitive answer on
that's
that.
That's bad.
Yeah. And that alone shows why we need DOGE, why we need to rein in the bureaucracy. You name me another landowner that doesn't even know how much land they own. Mm. I mean, most people would have to know that for tax purposes, if for no other reason. But the federal government can't give you an inventory.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if your grandpa built a fence 100 years ago around his cabin, and it turns out the fence has slightly encroached on federal land for 100 years, and they didn't even know it, they can still come back and require that you remove the fence or move the cabin or whatever. I mean, it's just, it's bad land management. So most estimates say about 74% of the land in Utah.
3/4 almost of the land in Utah, in southern Utah.
It's in Utah.
In Utah, okay.
It's a lot higher than that in a lot of the rural counties, but overall it's about 74%, and that's just way too much. And they're not a responsive landlord, and they're not a good partner. They don't cooperate very well. And what happens is when you get a Republican administration, then they feel pressure and they cooperate better for a while. Then you get a Democrat administration and they don't cooperate as well, at least at the high levels. At the local levels, a lot of it's personality driven. And you get some people that are really great and everybody loves working with them. You get some people that are terrible and nobody likes to work with them, no matter who's in the White House. But that isn't how a state should be managed. We shouldn't be, you know, trying to figure out what to do with most of the land in our state by dealing with bureaucrats who really aren't accountable to anybody and don't have any incentive to be a good neighbor or cooperate well. And again, this is why we need these big ideas. This is why, instead of saying, this is how we do business and maybe we can make it just a little bit better, which I'm willing to do when that's what we're stuck with. But now's the time to make big changes and say, why are we doing it this way?
Right.
Is there a better way to do it? And you know, the state has their lawsuit asking the Supreme Court whether the federal government can hold these unappropriated lands, not the parks, not the things that have been designated, but your run-of-the-mill sagebrush BLM land. Can the federal government hold that forever?
Right over there is some of it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, we've all seen a lot of it.
Yeah. Let's go positive side. What are the benefits of the feds owning some of this land? Are there some?
There are a few, and I will be honest enough to admit that. When I'm out talking to people, I do run into people who are worried about the state getting the land and selling it off. So we are used to having open space. We're used to having places we can go recreate. And it doesn't cost us anything to go recreate in most of the, you know, run-of-the-mill. You have to pay to get into a park, but you can go drive out on the desert. You can ride your horse, ride your bike, ride a four-wheeler out there, and nobody really wants to lose that.
Right.
So as we're thinking outside the box and looking at whether it should be this way, we have to take that into account too. There's a lifestyle that we're used to in the West that includes land and access. And the state has already passed a bill that says if they get title to the land, they'll manage it as public land, as state public land.
Okay.
And so that's the solution to that the state of Utah has chosen. But we do have to have eyes wide open when we're having these conversations that there are differences between the Western states with a lot of public land and Midwestern states where it's all private land. And some of those differences are to our benefit, and we have to be really careful how we move forward.
Is there pressure from the private sector to get some of this land and develop it? Is there a lot of pressure?
I mean, there's always land development pressure in Utah.
Yeah.
We're a fast-growing state. People want to live here. We are water limited, so we have to keep that in mind as we're developing land. And people here like having the open space. They like having the recreation opportunities. Now, obviously, we're not going to develop every rugged mountainside and every piece of desert, but we just have to make good policy decisions as we move forward about what should be developed and what we want to see stay open. And here in Washington County, that's intuitive. We're having those debates in real time all the time.
We're dancing around a little bit, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on the Northern Corridor thing and it was Zone 6 or whatever out there, but I know there are a lot of people that are like, you can't let them develop Zone 6. You can't do it.
Yeah.
And I know it's all tied together with this whole Northern Corridor thing, but
yeah.
As far as I know, the Northern Corridor thing, we're on hold for a little while, and we're kind of holding our water until there's a new administration, right?
Yeah, and the great news is there's going to be a new administration in a month. So you don't have to hold your breath very long. Enjoy the holidays, and we will be at work.
Yeah, love it, love it. Talking with Celeste Malloy today on the Andy Griffin Show. We're talking a little bit about federal lands and public lands. How close are, like, if is that mountain federal land? Is that red rock right there out the window? Is that, do you know? I mean, or if I were to
go, is it? Yeah.
Yeah, right there.
So we don't even think about it that often in Utah,
right,
we're just used to it. But generally, if you're seeing open space, it's probably federal land.
It's owned by the government.
And if it's not, then there's a really good chance that it's state land. Most of the private land in Utah is developed.
But you said in the Midwest, that's not the case.
Yeah,
well, if we go to Iowa or Indiana or whatever.
Sure, but in Iowa or Indiana, you don't drive by places like that where there are big open spaces. There's a lot of farmland and even maybe pasture ground, but they just don't have the open, undeveloped, rugged spaces that we have. And that's what's always captured people's imagination about the West. People love the West because they're are these open spaces and you can get to them. You can go out there and experience it yourself. And I don't know that politically we have the appetite for all that to be developed. But it's also time to change the way it's managed, because the federal government is a distant landlord and in a lot of ways an uninterested landlord.
I was going to say uninterested actually would be a good word for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so true. So true. Well, all right, cool. Very interesting conversation. We're talking with Celeste Malloy, congressman from the state of Utah. She is in Washington County now for a funeral. I don't know those that had not heard. Don Ibsen's wife, Joanna, passed away. Don Ibsen, of course, is a state senator here in from southern Utah. And, going through a tough time. And that very nice of you to come down for the funeral. And I have a funeral I'm going to tomorrow. And it's never a fun time. I hate funerals.
I do, too.
If you've lost someone close to you, you know why, you know. And I remember going to a funeral once for a relative of mine, and I was pretty upset. And everybody's like, why are you so upset? And I said, I'm sad that they're gone, but I'm also sad at all these other funerals I've had to go to over the last few years. It's never fun. But
yeah.
Hopefully Don and Danny and his family, they can bounce back and be okay with this. So we do need to get a break in here, so I better pay some bills or they're going to take my job away, Celeste. And I don't get elected, I get fired, or unelected, I get fired. So we'll do a weather break. We'll be back after this.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Welcome back. We're lucky enough to have a congresswoman on the show with us today. Celeste Malloy is here on the Andy Griffin Show. Hi, Celeste. You doing all right?
Yeah.
Yeah, life is good. We have some cool stuff coming up this week. I will not be here tomorrow, though, but Mello is going to host the show. And McCray Hepler will be on to talk about his latest video of what's up in St. George. And have you ever seen any of McCray's videos?
I have.
They're very cool. That dude. And I said, well, do you get paid for those? He goes, no.
Hmm.
I said, actually, I pay. I pay the video guy because, you know, he has like drone shots from above and everything. And he says, I actually pay for it. I guess his Business Eagle title benefits a little bit from it, maybe. But mostly he just does it because he loves St. George and loves to do it.
Just a passion project for
him.
Yeah. That's
really
cool.
Really cool. So you have a passion project, sort of, this bill that you're introducing about the Good Samaritan. And tell us about it.
Yeah. So it's the Good Samaritan Cleaning Up Abandoned Hard Rock Mines Bill. It's got a long name, but it's a concept that's been around for a long time. And the reason I'm excited about it right now is that for about 20 years, we've tried to get something through Congress that changes the incentives for somebody to clean up an abandoned mine. The Clean Water Act had some really stiff penalties in there for somebody who, you know, engages in a business activity that can pollute water. But before we ever passed a Clean Water Act, we had mines all over the West. And now, if you buy one of those mines or you take responsibility for that property in any way, you pick up all the liability going back to, you know, I don't know, the flood.
Wow.
And so there's a perverse incentive there where nobody wants to clean up an abandoned mine because mining practices 100 years ago were just not as thoughtful of water cleanliness as they are now. And so this creates a pilot project for 15 Good Samaritans, third parties, states, nonprofits, whoever, to come in and clean up an abandoned mine and show that they can do it, do a good job. It's better to have someone cleaning it up than to have them be scared of these penalties. It got through committee in the House, and it's passed the Senate, and we're voting on it this week the House side. So if it passes in the House, then it could go to the president's desk and be law by the end of this Congress. And that's a move in the right direction. Instead of having this legal hurdle, we can move forward on cleaning up these older mines that are, you know, sitting out there being a hazard.
When you say cleaning up, are you talking about the effect they have on the environment and the water and stuff? Or are you talking about the actual danger of people falling in one? What do you mean?
Both.
Both, okay.
Yeah, so if you go in and start doing something with an abandoned mine, then you've taken on that liability. And we want people to be able to go in and remediate these mines that are no longer operating. You know, old historic mines are sitting out there. Yeah. They're open and they're a hazard that way. There are also maybe chemicals in them that were used in mining decades and decades
ago.
Some
pretty nasty chemicals, yeah.
Yeah, and so what we want is for people to be able to go in and mitigate that and remediate these mines instead of being scared of the liability. So this is an exciting step in the right direction that we've been waiting a long time for. And it's exciting for me, 1 year into office, to possibly have a bill that makes it all the way to the president's desk.
That would be cool. Now, I think a lot, you know, average person who lives in now what is urban St. George, so what does that have to do with me? What do I care? But there are a lot of people. I mean, St. George is built on outdoor activity and stuff. Yeah. And if you go hiking, there are mines right in them there hills around
us. Yeah, this was a mining district. I mean, that's what Silver Reef was.
Yeah.
There was gold mining in the west part of the county. And just in Utah, I think there's 14,000 abandoned hard rock mines.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that's amazing.
Some of them are harmless and probably no one will ever find them. But it would be nice to have the state, excuse me, or other third parties be able to go in and remediate the ones that are sitting out there being a hazard.
Is there a map or something of all the mines in Utah? Is it out there somewhere?
The BLM's responsible for mapping that. I don't know that they have all of them. I mean, by the time they came around and started mapping, people have been mining here for a long time.
Speaking of mines, did you hear that story last week about the 63-year-old lady who went out looking for her cat?
No.
And, it's a sad story. She fell in a sinkhole. The sinkhole had developed because there was a mine underneath it, and they were doing something in the mine. You know, it was an old mine, but they were doing something to maybe clear the chemicals. I don't know the whole situation, but sinkhole developed, and she fell in the sinkhole and never found the cat, and they just barely found her body yesterday. So
this is why I don't own a cat.
Yeah. One of the many reasons, actually. The reason I don't own a cat is my wife would die because my wife has dander-induced asthma, so we can't.
That is a good reason not to have a cat.
Yeah, that's a really good reason. My wife always said when the kids would ask for a pet, she's like, when I'm dead, you can have whatever pet you want. So she hasn't died yet, thankfully. So, all right, Good Samaritan Law, what's the timeline again on that as far as passing and maybe president's desk?
We're supposed to be voting on it this week in the House. This is going to be a really busy week in Washington, D.C. I mean, we're in the lame duck session. It's busy for everybody. But especially for Utahns, we have a really rare occasion happening in Washington, D.C. this week where we're getting a new statue in the Capitol. So every state has two statues.
Okay.
And right now we have Brigham Young, who everybody knows who he is and what he did.
This is the right place.
And yes, and then Philo T. Farnsworth, who invented the television and grew up in Beaver. And we're going to, the state gets to choose who their statues are. So
that's tough, though, when you think about it. You've got to pick, in the whole history of your state, you have to pick two people that represent your state. Brigham Young, I think, is a great choice because he's the one that actually got here first, and this is where we're going to stop. But then you go, okay, who's number two?
Yeah.
Wow, there are a lot of choices.
There are a lot of choices. And, you know, I watch people all the time. I take people on tours of the Capitol, and you show them Philo T. Farnsworth, and they don't know who he is. But then when you tell them he invented the television, they can see why that's so important.
Kind of a big deal,
But the state decided in 2019 that they were going to switch him out for a different statue. Okay. And then COVID in 2020, they didn't want to do it when Utahns couldn't go and be part of the celebration. Anyway, the time has finally arrived. We're doing it this week, and the new statue is going to be Martha Hughes Cannon. Oh, sorry.
The new statue is going to be
Martha Hughes Cannon, who was the first female state senator in the country before women even had the right to vote.
Wow. Okay. So this would have been what, 1900s, early 1900s?
late 1800s.
Late 1800s, okay,
well,
even before that.
A lot of her life. So she lived a long life. She was a medical doctor. She's a very complicated woman who lived during a really complicated time in U.S. history. Mm-hmm. And it's been exciting for me to learn about her. I have to give a speech that day. And it's also a really misunderstood time in the history of our state and my faith. She was the fourth wife of a polygamous husband.
Right there, and people are going, oh, Utah, and they're poly. Okay.
Yeah, but she was also a medical doctor, and she ran against her husband. They ran in the same race,
she beat her husband.
Yeah. So it's been fun. I think having her there will help people who are in the Capitol and scan the little QR code to learn about her understand that Utah's history is not as bland or as maybe patriarchal as everyone expects it to be. So I think she'll be a good emissary for our state. I think she'll make people question some of their assumptions about Utah. Maybe people will want to talk about something besides Secret Lives of Mormon Wives and what SWIG is about.
So you being a woman and a woman congressperson, do you run into that occasionally? People going, well, Utah, that's a patriarchal, it's all about men, you know?
I do get that sometimes. But a lot of people have heard of the mommy bloggers in Utah or the media influencers in Utah. And so they do have sort of a complicated vision of what life is like here.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. Complicated vision of what life is like.
But the one thing everyone understands perfectly is SWIG. Everyone knows that we have these soda cocktails and they're like 45 ounces and I get a lot of questions about that. That has seemed to capture the imagination of the whole country in a way I'm not sure I totally understand as an insider.
If you can name right now, off the top of your head, two soda cocktails that they make at SWIG, then you probably have been there. You probably have a little bit of a soda thing going.
Yeah.
So I know I could right now. Yeah.
When you travel around the country, someone is probably going to ask you, what's up with that place that's like Starbucks, but it sells soda cocktails? And you'll have to be an emissary for the state and explain.
Okay. I will. In the midst, and I see you're drinking Dr. Pepper Zero. I've got the fully leaded stuff over here. I am in the midst of trying to cut back. I don't think I can cut it out because every time I've cut it out in my life, it's come roaring back worse than ever. So trying to cut back on the soda intake.
I follow the same pattern, only right now I'm not even trying.
I know what you mean. I understand. By the way, we've got about 15 minutes in the show. I'm going to get a commercial break in here, but if you want to talk with Celeste Malloy, if you'd like to call in or text me, the phone number to text first. This is the text line, 467-5842. And by the way, yes, that is my personal cell phone. I'm holding it in my hand. You can text me anytime, day or night, although if you text me between the hours of 10:30 p.m. and 5 a.m., I won't answer you until I get up. But 435-467-5842. If you would like to call, excuse me, into the program, it's a 435 area code, and then it's really easy, 673-5890. So our call number is 890. So 673-5890 to call in and talk with Celeste. I usually get a few texts, but I think people are just enjoying hearing your voice right now. So,
well, that's a nice change.
It's good to have you here talking on the program. And do you feel like people look at senators and congressmen and they go, okay, these people, they really, really know the inside of politics. They really, and I feel like, Celeste, with you, and this is not an insult, this is a compliment. I feel like you came in as one of us and you took the job as one of us. And yes, you're learning the political side of things deeper now, but I don't feel like that you are a politician, so to speak.
Thank you. I take that as a high compliment.
Yeah, it is.
And I take it as a duty of mine in this position to make sure that my constituents can see how politics work. I don't want people in Utah to think that Congress is a distant entity that they have no
mystery.
Access to.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm happy to be on shows like yours, talk about what's happening so that, someone who's driving to SWIG right now to get their morning fix feels like they understand what's happening.
It's too early for SWIG, 9:46. And we're both sitting here drinking soda.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there are, let's see, locations over here on 2nd West, and there's a location over there on 7th East. Yeah, I know I have a problem. I forgot that I was going to get the commercial break in, so I'll do that right now. We're talking with Celeste today on The Andy Griffin Show. Be right back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with The Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
I hit the wrong button, Celeste, but I got talking about, we were talking about something and I got distracted. So. But that's my sports.
High school sports.
Yeah, high school sports. I don't know if maybe there aren't that many people listening that care, but you're from Cedar, just letting people know. Cedar has been, according to the USSAA, they've dropped them down to the 3A classification, so they'll no longer be competing in the same region, even the same classification with Pine View, Dixie, Snow Canyon, Hurricane, Desert Hills, Crimson Cliffs. They're out now. It's kind of sad to me.
It's a sad day if you're a sportscaster. It's probably an exciting day if you're a Cedar High fan, though.
Yeah, so it'll be renew that Canyon View rivalry.
Yeah.
They'll both be in the same region and same classification. They'll go from being the smallest 4A school to being the largest 3A school.
Yeah.
But one thing that they never really took into account in my mind was Cedar and Canyon View include ninth grade in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So their numbers, even though they were pretty close to the schools here, there was a whole extra grade involved. Here it's just 10 through 12. And so it's probably where Cedar belongs, but it is kind of sad to see the rivalries at least put on hold for a while. So anyway, all right, Brent's on line one and wants to talk to the congresswoman. Brent, how you doing?
I'm doing really good, Andy. Thank you for taking my call. Good morning, Celeste.
Good morning.
I think it's time we do something really big. So they're being called the Doge Brothers, right?
Uh-huh.
Why don't we just eliminate the BLM and turn everything over to the states? And that would reduce the, I don't know how much the BLM's budget is federally every year.
It's big.
Is that even a possibility? Are we talking about doing that pretty much anyway?
You know what, Brent? Right now, everything's kind of a possibility. And that's what I love about DOGE. They're willing to look at everything.
Everything.
Now, completely eliminating the BLM would take an act of Congress because they were created by Congress. I don't see any reason.
Well, that's your job. Let's write a bill to do it.
Yeah. So
wow.
There's a DOGE caucus in the House that I belong to. And that's kind of what we're talking about. Like, this is the time to talk about radical change and paradigm shifts. What helps keep Americans more free? That's what we should be doing. Not how do we do it? Not what's been done and how the budgets work. What helps protect the freedom of Americans? So I love your idea.
Who has there been a nomination yet for the BLM to be the head of the BLM?
There has not. I spent a lot of time this weekend on that question, actually. I have heard they have somebody in mind. Nobody seems to know a name. So there are several of us who are still trying to help make sure we get somebody nominated who understands the issues we have in Utah and will be ready, willing, and able to help us in Utah.
Yeah, and it's not just Utah. I mean, it's the whole Western United States. We have property and run cattle in Nevada. I live in Utah.
Yeah.
But we run cattle in Nevada, too. And Nevada is, like, even more, a higher percentage. I think it's the highest percentage state of all in the nation.
It is.
Of BLM land.
But
so
there are some Western states where they just don't care as much as we do. For example, in Montana, they're about 30% federal, and they kind of like it at that ratio.
Wait, big giant Montana is only 30%?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because of the railroads and the forested land and the checkerboards, they just didn't end up with the same percentage of public land that we have. And so when I say someone who will take care of Utah, what I mean is someone who understands these, you know, there's basically seven states that really have a lot of public land, and then there are some states that are Western states that just don't have as much, and they're not willing to really look at huge changes the way we are in Utah.
So what would it do financially to the state of Utah if they took over? Could the state of Utah handle it? The federal government's willing to go in the hole all the time, but the states can't do that.
Yeah, I think the state could handle it if they also got title to the subsurface. So if we had the mineral estate, right. We could produce oil and gas, right. We could do mining, then I think the state could handle it. But the only terms that it's ever been offered on are the state can have the surface and the federal government will keep the subsurface, and that is not a good deal.
They want to have their cake and eat it, too. All right. Thank you, Brent, for calling. Appreciate you, man.
Thank you.
956 on KDX. Boy, that would be wild. Went into the BLM, just gone.
Yeah, I think some people's heads would explode.
Yeah, I know there's one BLM that should be gone for sure, and then maybe the other one too. I don't know.
Yeah. And since I don't think we have another call yet, it is worth mentioning, I think we all have to buckle up and get ready for some of that. It's fun to talk about radical change. When changes start happening, people get a little bit insecure.
It's scary.
And so we're just going to have a little bit of tolerance for risk and be willing to try some new things. Otherwise, we're going to get what we've always gotten.
So the feeling, you know, going in, well, for my whole lifetime is the government is bigger than one man or the government is bigger than one administration. What you're saying is there are some things that aren't too big for the administration to change.
Yeah, especially if the branches are willing to work together. And it's designed that way. The branches check each other when they have bad ideas.
Checks and balances, yeah.
But when it's a good idea and the branches are all working together, then we can get some big things done. So it's going to take an administration that's willing to play ball, which we are about to have. It's going to take a Congress that can work together, which I hope we have. We historically like to fight with each other, but I think when we have good ideas, we can pull together and move forward on that. And then a judicial branch that isn't going to, you know, be activist and try to undo it. And signals look like we've got that right now. So this really is a unique moment.
And it has a lot of liberals really scared.
Yeah.
Good. That's a good thing. 9:57 now on Katie. We're just inching up on the end of the show. Celeste, anything you want to tell the people of Utah before you head out today? And by the way, thanks again so much for coming on the show. It's just a pleasure to have you.
Thank you. Well, I want to take every opportunity I get to say thank you. You said that I'm one of us, and I feel that way too, which makes it feel like this is a really rare opportunity that I never expected to be representing us.
Yeah.
And I just want to thank everybody who supported me and make sure that everyone knows that I'm here and I'm still responding. I'm talking to people. I'm answering questions because that's my job, and I take that very seriously.
You are now in the history books as a congresswoman from the state of Utah, and that will never go away.
That is
no matter
wild.
What happens in the future. Yeah, I was reading a story earlier today about Donald Trump and how his impact on, you know, president once and then not for 4 years and then president again, and how that is a historical moment and the things that he's done, and that's never going away. It's always going to be there. Kids are going to be learning about you and about Donald Trump forever. So
yeah, I was at a rodeo this weekend in Vegas. And
yeah, did you go to the NPR? Is that
the NFR? Yeah,
NFR. I mean,
I ran into some Utahns and there was a junior high girl there, and she said, "I just learned about you in my government class." And I thought that was really cool.
Kind of humbling, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Well, I hope they taught good things.
I hope so, too. I didn't ask her that.
I just learned about you. Yeah, they said that you're stealing. No, no. Celeste, thanks again for coming on today.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. That'll do it for the show today. Again, Mello hosting tomorrow, and McCray Hepler will be on the program. I'll be back on Wednesday. Thanks.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.